Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And it's time for...
Ride Like the Wind, Ride Like the Wind, Unspun.
Are we, what are we riding?
Christopher Cross there.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Your son sings better than you.
I was, Christopher Cross is hard to imitate. I'm sorry, but what the hell's going on in Vancouver City Hall? This is the, I don't know if I laugh or cry.
Peloton Ken.
I mean, okay, so for those who don't know, the mayor got caught out by Pete Fry, city councilor, who uncovered, like, this is actually, I understand where he's coming from, because there's rooms in City Hall that opposition councillors don't get to see. Like, I never got invited to the mayor's office, official office.
Right.
There's a fake mayor's office and there's a real one. Anyways, this one space used to be in used for board meetings for with dignitaries. And Pete had wondered why it was closed now and why they got, you know, and so he found the door, they left the door open, and he walks by and sees there's a Peloton and what looks like a Facebook marketplace gym setup. It's like a pretty crappy gym setup, but a gym setup in what was a an important boardroom for counselors mostly to use. And he's like, what is this room for and who's it for? And right. You'd go. And so then the mayor turns out it's his. And then I can't believe what he did next. Just like the strangest
so
thing.
When news got out that there was this refurbished boardroom, repurposed, I think was the word that was used, boardroom with Peloton and a chin-up bar and some free weights and whatever. And it got out, like, it took some time to get out, because gone are the days where there were actual municipal reporters from the province, The Sun, Global, CTV. Like, there would be a group of people who spent every day at City Hall when there was enough budget in media to pay people to do that. And that's something that I think is really at the root of this as well, because there are just so few discerning eyeballs there that it has to become a story. And if you watch this is the part that you're referencing, the embarrassing bit is when people started calling City Hall and saying, what's this about a gym and a Peloton and a thing in the mayor's office and in the boardroom? And it was like, oh no. And then a statement came out that was like, it's just, you know, and people like, and media members are like, no, it's not a statement. We're coming with cameras. We're going to need you to talk about this. And so the cameras show up and they're all in a holding area. I remember when I floated by it on social media, and that's when the mayor of Vancouver decided it would be a good idea to do the press conference on the Peloton.
Just like, I mean, I guess he's owning it. You could argue that.
He certainly is. I would just say it distracts from a very busy time with a lot of big, heady issues to tackle. And it, that we're doing the, let me just get into my workout gear and hop on my Peloton to explain to you how I'm riding a couple hours a day on my Peloton while working so that I'm training for the Grand Fondo. Like, I don't know.
It's so many levels of ridiculousness.
I'm dumbstruck. I'm gobsmacked. I'm speechless. I don't know. When was the last time you saw me without words
to say? Never. So the thing is what I've been fairly quiet on Twitter, as you may have noticed lately, because I've been so busy trying to survive in business in this market.
This brought
me back in 2 weeks, because we'll talk about the other one later. But the it's your undoing in politics to look arrogant or elitist or anything like that, or out of touch, right, with the voter. And this is a perceived, I don't care if you say it's, you're using it. His defenders are saying it's really important that he gets his exercise while he's at work. You know, they do 12-hour days and yada, yada. I'm like, believe me, when you go to City Hall and you work there, because I did, those 12 hours are pretty much jam-packed. There's no window of opportunity to put a gym in there. And if there is, what are you doing? Why don't you go home?
It's like, but there's actually a gym in City Hall.
There is two places.
A workout space.
Three places you can go, actually. There's in the basement, there's a group fitness area where they hold yoga, and they have for staff, and they have teachers. I don't know, they're usually other staff that just do this, donate time and do yoga. You'd go, I leave the office sometimes, and I'd be hear them down there doing their stretches, and they're yelling and they're screaming and that kind of stuff. So that's down in the basement. But we also have we rent the whole building. The engineering department is in the corner of Broadway and Cambie. We have a big, the city has a ton of offices in that building. It's all City Hall building offices. And there's a strata there as well. But we do have access, if you request, to the big gym that's in that building.
Right.
Because we rent so many units in that building that they can have access if requested. And he could have access to that if going to the gym was so important. There's also a Fitness World right across the street too.
Might argue that it'd be difficult for the mayor to go to the Fitness World though. I mean, like a private space might be necessary.
Man of the people. Come on.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Bringing his, what is he called? Mojo? What is he calling it? His whatever
I don't
back.
Know.
His thing
know.
Back. His stupid
swagger,
go swag at the old Fitness World. Support a local business. It's owned by isn't it owned by like basketball guy
Steve Nash?
Yeah, there you go.
Or is it Trevor Linden?
But then you've made this decision to put this ridiculous gym in a space. By the way, that space originally, when Philip Ohm was mayor, was the mayor's office. So the mayor's office was there. You'd walk straight in and then you'd walk into this boardroom, which now is a generic boardroom, fake, but mayor's boardroom. And then this room was the mayor's office. And it's really cool because it has secret doors all along it. You can't see them. It looks like wall, and then doors open up and it's a door. So you could go walk
like
in
the
there.
Oval Office.
Yeah, you could walk in there and not know there's an office there. So it's all very kind of, it was the mayor, it was Philip's own, his office. Gregor came along and he changed it all and expanded and took a whole wing of the building, put a shower in. That was an issue back in the day. He you know, because he rode his bike to work. That's how he got his exercise. He rode, as we know, Gregor Robertson rode his bike everywhere, an actual bicycle, on the road to stay fit. Because he thought, for him, that's how he relieved his stress. But he could get to work, he'd be soaking wet or whatever. So he put a shower in. Okay, that makes sense. There was also a shower in the basement that he could have put in, but he apparently put one in his office, whatever.
Is that why there's so many bike lanes from like Cornwall to City Hall? Everything is like shut down, boxed out. Here's how the mayor got to work. Yeah, it's wild. There's like 17 bike lanes that go from his old house to City Hall.
That's right.
Yeah. And then literally, he made it into a cul-de-sac
Gregor's
because of
way.
Bike lanes. Yeah. And then sold it for. Yeah.
Oh, he did.
I mean, we could go on and on about how.
But I just think that the decision to hold a press conference on the bike, as you mentioned, is the weirdest decision I've ever
seen. That's the part I don't get.
I mean, hold a press conference outside, say, here's the bikes. But to get on the bike, it's just, I feel if I was his, and we talk about this, his communications persons, there are enough of them at City Hall. How many?
Cheers.
That he would have been told.
What would you do if you were his communications person? What would you have done? And I'll tell you what I would have done.
First of all, I would say, don't put a gym in the City Hall, you idiot. Second of all, hold a press conference outside and then give him a tour. And then, but the argument would be similar to what he was saying. We need to work, you know, this, but also make sure it's, when you decide to do it, it has to be accessible to the entire council. Obviously, Pete Fry didn't have access to it. So maybe all the ABC counselors were in there working out together. What a ridiculous image. And that's kind of what we're left with because of his decision. This image of this mayor riding a Peloton, the most pretentious bike you can, stationary bike.
Thousands of dollars to have one and subscribe to, because it's a subscription
based
thing.
$8 a month or something.
Is it? I don't even know.
It's very expensive. And
I can't,
it just looked
one.
Ridiculous. And so that's basically the story that's starting to build with Ken Sim, is he's kind of a bit silly. Don't you think? Kind of not taking him seriously as a mayor of a big city. It's hard to take this guy seriously.
You know what?
He talks about partying and he's guzzling beer and he's, I mean, it's not cool, dude.
Catalano days doesn't bug me as much. That doesn't bother me.
It's not
because I'm comparing him to his predecessor still. I'd take him 7 days a week and twice on Sundays over Kennedy Stewart.
Sure. But I'm talking about
7 days.
Build your brand, right? How you're ruining your brand.
Do you want what I would have done?
Yeah.
I'll tell you. I would have been not dressed in my workout gear, but I put mine on today for you just to make a point. I would have been all business in explaining, you know, I am so busy doing this role that I literally cannot even step out of my office. So I, under on my own expense, have moved some of my own personal equipment into this boardroom, because in watching the news story, it's like, it's not soundproof. It, you can hear through it. There's a reason why it's not used, and da 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 da. But I wouldn't have explained all that. I would have said a boardroom that gets little or no use, I have repurposed to put in some items so that I can maximize my time in the office to serve the people of Vancouver better. I would have used it to be all business and been like, you know what, guys, I got a lot going on. I'm ready to take your questions about this. And then you can go in and you can take all the B-roll you want, but I got stuff to do. Yeah. So this is all sparkly things. I would have said, this is much ado about nothing. And I am going to work. I wouldn't be like, I spent 2 hours a day on this Peloton because I'm working for the Grand Fondo. That's where I was like, what are you doing? Like, what are you actually doing? You're training for the Fondo? How about you take the Fondo off? Because we, right? Like, what's going on in municipal politics is kind of wild to me right now, whether it's like what's happening in North Van, you know, all the stuff at Metro Vancouver that we need to talk about, you know, even up in Kamloops, it's off the rails. Harrison Hot Springs is a nightmare. Even in Port Coquitlam, my favorite mayor, Brad West, going on a junket to Amsterdam. What? What even is that? Sorry, you're going to, what? Like, all of it. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, you see the expense, and Jerry D'Abavoni from Metro being unavailable for comment about
$700,000 a year.
$700,000 a year. I'm like, holy, that's twice what he's going to be in Vancouver.
Right, but I understand that in order to bring in, and this is the argument we get every time we challenge how much money somebody makes in the political realm, we get, in order to lure in good, talented, smart people, you need to pay for them. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get that.
Yeah.
But when it is exposed just how inflated that is for the person who apparently, allegedly, and I don't know this man, I have never spoken to this man, but I'm looking at it as a reporter, as a journalist, and saying, hold on, this is the individual that is overseeing what went from $700 million to now $3.6 billion. We're paying him how much to oversee that debacle, and then tell us that there's no independent investigation going to go into how that happened. And then there is one. And then we want to go talk to him about it, and he's not available, and he's not in council. It's like,
mm-hmm. And
now it's adding up to, excuse me?
Well, and I've talked many times about Metro and its opaqueness, and
you have,
and it's over its budget. It's the second biggest budget in the province as far as government, and we don't know where they're spending their money. And we see them doing capital projects that are spending out of control. You know, I don't know if that's Jerry D'Abravone's fault, because it actually started before his time, but and the contractor, there's a whole bunch of stuff that happened there. There's a story behind that. That's probably, right. You know, he can explain it. But definitely in this situation where you are being dragged through the media and you're not making yourself available, just make things worse. And, you know, and going back to your point about the mayor of Vancouver, like, why isn't he screaming about this? They're the biggest shareholder of Metro.
Go back to the Jerry. And the problem here is that when the questions are being asked respectfully.
Yeah.
I would like you to make yourself available. No. Excuse me? You must make yourself available. The transparency must be there. Like, that's taking the spin out. Because somebody somewhere is like, how are we going to position this? Crisis management team assemble. It's like, no. What happened? Mm-hmm. Actually say what happened. Because you said it may not be his problem. It might be something he was handed. But the definition of insanity is to continue to do the same thing wrong and expect a different outcome. Like,
well, we need
what are we doing?
We need these. I mean, Metro has got an important job.
We need
job.
The facilities. We do.
We don't.
Oh my
need
God! I'm not saying that Metro should dissolve and we shouldn't do the big infrastructure builds. We need to figure out why all of this bureaucracy, red tape, and spending is happening, and the work is not getting done in a way that is responsible to the taxpayer. And that's not a conservative talking point, because you ask most anybody who watches this or listens to me on the radio or watches me on TV. I'm a left-wing nut snowflake, according to most people. But I want my money to be spent responsibly. So somebody might go, oh my God, she's a conservative. Okay, whatever it is, I just want accountability on the money I'm spending. I want a reason why it just keeps going up to my detriment, to your detriment, to the detriment of my neighbor. What are we doing? What are we doing?
Tax bills are due on July 3rd. And I'm looking at mine. I haven't paid it yet because I'm like, it's 30% higher than it was last year.
Yeah.
30%. That's not, you know, that's Metro. A lot of it's Metro, by the way.
The excuses are pissing me off, George. The excuses are pissing me off.
But at least we got, at least the province is running properly, right?
Oh, my goodness. Where to begin? Where to begin?
Well, first of all, I'm going to do a plug. I'll do a plug for my article.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
For those who might, well, there's an article today in the VancouverSun.com. If you go there, I can't push it out on Facebook. I've pushed it out on Twitter because Facebook won't let you push out news stuff from print media in Canada because of that ban they have on. So you can't
screen cap the article and put it out in large font. Do that.
But it's really focused on some mysterious stuff going on in the premier's office that I think I just want to encourage people to go read it. But it more draws attention. So there's a person working there and they shouldn't be working there. And you read it, article. I just feel like I don't want to get into it because it's so complicated.
It's complicated.
The question comes down to why are people working there that have such major conflicts that are so obvious? I hate that. And also, what it draws attention to the ownership of media in this province that is more scary than I think. I couldn't write everything in this article, but I can talk about this stuff more and think in our podcast. My concern is, you know, is influence in media. The fact that traditional media is getting shut down by, you know, because they can't afford to run. We saw Corus get cutbacks this week.
Terrible.
You look at the readership of the Vancouver Sun province combined. Community papers are suffering. TV suffering, we know that.
By the way, Steele and Vance coming to an end was not Czech cutting us. That was a Steele and Vance decision. Just putting it out there.
Good point. Because it's a good show. And a good focus on that show is its local focus, which is what we're losing. And you talked about this earlier when you talked about the City Hall and local journalism and people covering City Hall. There's less and less true journalists out there, unbiased journalists. And I think this is something I've talked about. I come from journalism. That's what I used to do. And it's, you know, access, the fact that journalists don't have access, they're getting they're getting blocked, but they have to pay for searches in government. It's just like there's so many things that are working against us. And as is, we know it's the case, democracy and successful democracy are directly tied to successful journalism.
Right.
Letting journalists do their stuff. There's going to be biased media, of course. There always will be. There'll be funded things, but you shouldn't be hiding it. Shouldn't be hiding the people behind it. And certainly if there's a person who's a senior person on a board of a media outlet who's also who also works in the premier's office and is potentially connected to media buys to those media outlets, which is what I touch on, then these are questions we need to ask. What is going on? And where are the lines getting too blurred here? And I think that, you know, we see the worst of it in the States with Donald Trump saying, you know, screaming at saying journalists and put, you know, it's this hatred to journalism. We're seeing it in South America. We're seeing it in England. We're seeing it. It's scary times. And
it works for whammy for politicians.
You know, it's a double whammy when the business model is dying and you've got these politicians who are using journalists as a weapon. To as something that's bad. It's true journalists. It's a crazy time, and I don't know. I'm trying to help in any way I can.
And we will, and we will continue to. There are things being built, that will hopefully, correct some of the pendulum swing that's happened here. I don't know if it can affect public perception. I think that's a big issue here for, and when you read George's article, you should go to George_Affleck on social media, on Twitter, at George_Affleck. And thank you. We'll do it again with the sound effects at the end, but just go there to read the article. Cause I found it really fascinating and enlightening. And goes deep into very complex corners.
You've made it this far.
I know. I got there. I went all the way to the end, George. I saw it to the end, and I even gave you a couple of notes up before we started recording. But the interesting part is that the stories such as these The facts at the root of the stories such as these do a disservice to the hardworking journalists who mm-hmm. are actually telling you the facts and the truths and the things they've uncovered, which can evolve and change when a story unfolds. You report what you see, and then you continue to investigate, and then you continue to report what you see, and then you continue to investigate, and then you continue. Like, that's what journalism actually is. It's not, here's a story and I'm perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Or here's a story that's all shined up and, you know, made sure that it didn't, you know, offend anybody. Like, nobody's actually doing that. And in the ethical, I want to say sincere journalistic motivation and the greater public, there's a chunk of public who will look at all journalism as the ones that might be a part of the ones that's owned, part of yeah. the ones that have a political bent, the ones that have a, you know what, we're going after this, we're going for the jugular, mm. we're going to point this out, we're going to put this, you know, ubiquitous headline out there to make people think that maybe it's like, that does a disservice to those. And I'm going to point to a couple of the major ones that I know have really ethical people. You know, when people want to say CBC is government owned, it's fully bought and whatever, you know, you and I both have worked at CBC. I did not see that there. I saw a newsroom that if there's something to have a knock against CBC, it's that it had six people there to change a light bulb. Like, whereas in a smaller situation where the bank wasn't as big at the time, there mm-hmm. was one person running around changing all the light bulbs as they needed, and maybe you had to wait for your light bulb to get changed because he's very, very busy. So there were different mm-hmm. sort of budget levels, and the CBC has always been the best supported because there is government money there. So, but that's not to say that the government is telling the CBC what the narrative is to put out in the airwaves. And for a long time, we had a conservative government, and that they weren't get that talking point wasn't used against CBC. And then when the government swung to the left, when it was the Liberal government, all of a sudden it's Justin Trudeau's libtard media outlet. And then now you got vitriol coming at the journalists who have nothing to say over budgets, don't talk about the grants, don't sit in the big swanky offices. Just boots on the ground people who have seen their jobs shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink and are so overworked, and they're out on the street covering the stories to save democracy, to really give people the facts they see, and being attacked on the street. Come on.
You and I know, because we work at TKNW and I fill in every once in a while, how small the teams have gotten to produce these 3-hour shows.
It's unbelievable.
Which includes, you as the host, who have to produce, you know, 3 hours of radio and host it. It's astounding to me how much you have to generate at that station as the host and with one producer. And of course, the only thing I think you're guilty is if you might miss some stories because you actually don't have time. But believe me, because I've worked in several newsrooms over the years and media outlets here, and their only care is caring about what they do. Bias sometimes exists, but usually that's the columnist or the op-ed person. You know,
thing, right? You as an op-ed columnist do have a point of view mm-hmm. that you're coming from. You're not a news journalist.
Page. Yeah,
exactly. Which is why people, and I'm going to flip the script out of Vancouver and even out of Canada and say, that's why people are so pissed off at the New York Times, right? Because there's the New York Times that reports the news, and then there's the opinion arm of the New York Times under the same banner. And that's what pisses people off, is the confusion. It's like, oh my God, I read in the New York Times. Did you see? COVID came from a lab in Wuhan, China. No, that was an opinion piece that was written. And what's not right beside it is the opinion of, you know, Dr. Fauci saying, of course, I mean, it could have, but it didn't. Like, every study, everything everybody's seen, it shows, but he's open to hearing proof that it did. But the op-ed piece is like, it did. And it's like, that's not news. That's an opinion.
Yes.
And it gets lost because it was in the New York Times. And I just use a very, mm-hmm. very, very flashpoint subject that will garner people coming at me of like, it was this and that and that, because people are pissed. People are mad. And they're looking for people to be mad at. And what's happening right now is they're mad at the messenger. So back to your article, it stokes the fires of those people who are angry to see that there might be somebody, as you said, in a position of power in government that has a connection to the media.
Outlets, the church and state, right? This is what this is all about.
That's it.
If you believe in, and this is the challenge in America right now, the division between politics and journalism and church and state.
Religion.
Religion, and we use quite often, if those people who work as journalists, you often say in journalism, church and state, when you refer to journalism and government, because it is supposed to be like that. Even in America,
separate. It's
all mixed.
We're separate.
But yeah, right. But these things are all staying too close, they're getting too tight. And that's kind of what I touch on. And I think that it's a real problem. And I think, but the what's interesting right now, we have a potential federal election coming. We got a provincial election coming. I have the highest respect for the electorate they're more, and I've talked about this before, they're more intuitive than I think most people give them credit for, us people who vote. And we usually get it right. Sometimes we don't, but usually because it's democracy, there's a fix on the way. And I think that, I think we're at a time right now that's pretty dire, but I do have hope that there is a way out.
What I find really interesting in that regard is how the complaints here are the complaints in Alberta and Ontario and Quebec to a lesser degree. But then you jump south of the border, similar complaints there. You go across the pond, similar complaints there. There are very few democracies that don't have some level of this bubble up of inflation, fuel prices, supply chain, the echo effects of COVID, housing issues, homelessness, drugs and addiction, mental health concerns. These are not unique to our province. These are not unique to our country. These are not unique to our continent. And yet they are hyper local wedge issues.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. Let's go to municipal, or let's go to provincial politics here for a second. And looking at the most recent polling, we talked about it last week with BC United and the BC Conservatives. We've seen the NDP sitting around the 40% mark. And then the BC Conservatives are sitting at, 33? And then BC United was like right there at a 28 or 30. And then in this most recent poll, 12.
Yeah.
Under the Green Party.
I mean, like, it's
what happens there.
Polls
George?
Are polls. Well, yeah, the bottom's falling out, right? So I don't know what the roadmap is for Kevin Falcon. But will he have to step down to hand over everything to the Conservatives in order for the Conservatives to be able to win a majority, which could have been his for whatever reason? As we know, the party split, and John Rastad is resonating. His message is obviously resonating better with the electorate at this moment in time. And
so is his logo.
Falcon wasn't really willing to go there. Yeah, there's a whole national thing. But, things swing back and forth. That's democracy. And you could argue, federally, he's getting a bump because of that. But I also think that we've had, since 2017, we've had the NDP and our economy is not good. There's nothing being built. I uncover this kind of arrogance at the premier's office that clearly exists. People want change. We're in a change moment. And we've talked about this many, many times when different kinds of election. Kevin Falcon just wasn't able to embrace that. I'm the answer to change. I am the change. Whereas John Rustad has managed to capture that. The momentum was there. I talked about this over a year ago that the NDP could lose this election. You can go back, roll tape, that it was possible. And at that time, people didn't believe me. But the momentum, you could see it was happening, that there was this pushback. It just didn't happen to be the BC United who chose it. And you and I, we've talked about this, the name change, big mistake. And then just having the issues, which are a lot of not nice issues that John Rustad has embraced, which are going to be interesting if he wins.
I'm going to go back to what you were saying about the BC economy and nothing's being built. I think there's some spin in what you said there, because I think when you look at how BC has navigated our way through the last 4 years and unprecedented times and like wild, like we'll look back one day and realize just how much post-traumatic stress we all suffered in a national sense. I think BC came through it pretty damn well, given the fact that we've had both heat dome and atmospheric rivers almost wipe out every highway system in our province. Those being built as quickly as they were, that has to be something that we don't just remember, but actually speak of when we're talking about nothing's being built. Because, you know, we can talk about, nobody's more upset about the Massey Tunnel than me. I used to live in Tawas and I drive through that tunnel constantly. I hate it. It was my first column I ever worked on wrote for the Orca was about that. The tunnel, like the infrastructure issues, absolutely. It's not perfect. I'm not like, yay, it's great, everything's rosy. But to say it's terrible is also not accurate, in my opinion, when looking at this government. I don't know that another party could have done a better job. I don't know if they could have done a worse job or a better job. All I know is, as far as it went, as far as it could have gone, and I look across the country at other places, I'm really happy I live here. I'm really happy I live here.
And whether 100%. That's, I mean, just walk right? around but here. It's a beautiful place.
I just wanted to put it out there that in terms of this show is called Unspun, to say that this is tanked and that shit and nothing's getting built.
No, but here's a to bring it all together. You remember working as a when you did stories and stuff, and you were like so proud and you got kudos, good job. And then the question was, what's next? What do you do next? It's like
right.
Kind of just, you didn't even get a chance to, it's always about what's next. And that's politics too.
For sure. That's why I'm not in politics.
Your history only has this much value, this much value. And it's like, what's next? You know, are you next or is it?
Totally. But I think as people are facing down what is an election that's in October, which feels like a long way away, politically it is. But for people that are like heading out on their summer vacations and then they're going to get their kids back to school and open their eyes and it's going to be go to the polls. I find it fascinating to see the ads that are running now. We talked about that movie trailer ad. What's the name of the thing that, what's it called? Broken BC. Mm-hmm. They're going hard. I heard one on CKNW with Selena Robinson in it. And I'm like, who's Broken BC? Who is Broken BC?
I don't know that one, but yeah, there's quite a few of them out there.
Yeah. It's definitely attacking the NDP, but is it BC United or is it the Conservatives or is it an independent? I don't know.
Who knows? That's the thing. But until July 25th, there's no real rules on that kind of stuff too. That right. July or 23rd, when the election finance rules really kick in. So if you're right. funded or
explain being... those just real quick, like just so people understand when the writ drops or.
Well, the writ's one thing, but then there's a rule on basically it's certain number of months out of the election. And so in civic elections, it's a year of. Basically, you just got to you got to be transparent. And after
but
July
you spend,
3rd, and you can't, right. you know, that. So it stops the whole super PAC concept in Canada when we have these kinds of rules, right? You can't, it's really hard to have a third party thing that weights the election one way or the other. It's just because everything has to be transparent. And Elections BC, in this case, can shut you down if you're getting funding or you are paying for ads. And the rules get more and more strict every election, and it becomes almost challenging. Even for me, when I ran provincially, it took me a year to get my financial stuff approved by Elections BC. It's very
big. Wow.
They question everything.
Yeah.
Why?
Which is, but it's good.
Yeah. No, I didn't have a complaint. It was a bit weird,
no,
though.
But you're,
I felt
you
like
can
I was
do
being
it.
Targeted, but
yeah.
But
you're a threat. Have they called you to be the leader of BC?
I don't think anybody wants that job right now.
I have friends who are calling me, telling me that they've been called to join BC United.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. I'm like, wow, that sounds like a life preserver call right there.
It's
going
to be have to be an amalgamation, obviously, of some form. Yeah. The last poll showed zero seats for BC United. Zero.
What?
Yeah, that came out. This is a combined poll where they took all the data and collect that one poll. I forget what it's called. And it was zero seats for BC United based on all the polls combined that they do. And then they do an analysis of all the polls.
Yeah.
Predicted zero seats for BC United.
Can I end on a really cool thing I did last night?
Yes.
I went to an event.
How can I say no to that?
I never go out. I know. Well. It was a rhetorical question.
Right.
I went to an event at Bob Rennie's house.
Oh, yeah. You mean his place down the downtown east side or?
The place down on First Avenue.
Oh, okay.
It's really cool. But he held the event called Out on Patrol. And it's an initiative put by, you should look up Out on Patrol. I tweeted about it, but I'll read their mission statement sign. It's a nonprofit peer support organization for 2S LGBTQ2 plus members of law enforcement, focusing on community outreach and charitable work and education. Outonpatrol.ca, and it's endorsed by the BC Association of Chiefs of Police. So it was a really interesting and eclectic group of people gathered. They only really started this Out on Patrol back in 2019. So through the pandemic, probably not the greatest, but it was really interesting to sit, stand and listen to the Chief of Police, Vancouver Police, and there were other police officers. I was there with my cousin Cindy, who's a police officer in Surrey, and have them say, you know what, we acknowledge that there has been, you know, there have been significant issues with policing and the LGBTQ2 plus community over the years. It's been, you know, unwelcoming. And the president of Out on Patrol said, you know, when I always knew I wanted to be a cop, but as a closeted gay teen, I didn't know if there was a place for me in policing. And they're trying to say that, yes, there is. And there needs to be more conversation about it. And it was really, it was very, very cool and interesting. And I was proud to be invited to it. And I just thought I'd put outonpatrol.ca out there.
Nice.
On Unspun.
So is this our last show for the summer? Or is it next week?
Yes.
This is it, right?
This is it. Because we're Canada Day to Labor Day. We're, unless something big breaks, and then you'll be like, Jode, hop on. We're doing one, right?
I can't control myself.
I know. Yes. But I miss you too. So we'll have to meet on a patio and just record it.
100%, of course. Yeah. Yeah. So, that's it then, isn't it? I mean, we went long, I think, didn't we?
I think we're perfect.
Okay.
You can follow along on social media. Of course, you should like and subscribe to Unspun Podcast, unspunpodcast.com. You can find this guy at George
_
Affleck, George _ Affleck on your Twitter. I am at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y, at Jody Vance. And we're always around. We're staying local. We're committed to it. If you've got story ideas, we love it when people like and comment. And we do get a bunch of comments now. It's really quite something. People are listening. Go figure. Local. Keep going, George.
Bye-bye.
See you in September.
See ya.